The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
And our last day in Milwaukee, it is game day, game number four tonight. And welcome on in. Spurge is with us. The Iron Man is running the controls behind the scenes, Jared Nielsen. And I'm just ready to get this game started and finished. Milwaukee has been fine, but it's time to go. How's that? So I just want to get to this game and then move on. Jordan Spurgeon is with us. So you jumped in this morning on the Suns, right? And what did they have to say? Anything new? Like everything Spurge has been, can they build a wall around Giannis? And can Devin shoot straight? And the thing is, we've had 2 days. It's now turning into a third day of this. So there's only so many ways you can cut up. Can Devin shoot straight? And can you build a wall around Giannis? Was there anything new this morning from the Suns?
Really, the only thing is people bringing up that in the two LA series, game three was a loss. Game four was the turning point. That was really it. That's what Mikal Bridges said. We have the sound. We can play it for you in a second here. But that's really it, because yesterday it was nothing but build a wall, play our game. Devin Booker needs to hit his shots. That was it. You're right. That's exactly what it is.
So Vegas has the Suns as underdogs tonight. The Bucks are favored by four. The home team that loses a game at home, that's where the advantage goes. Suns win tonight. They can wrap up an NBA title on their home court. Suns lose tonight. Then they go back, and it becomes really interesting. Tell me about Bridges. Let's just get into that.
Yeah, Bridges, and this is the team's motto. They've been pretty confident all year long. Let's go ahead and play it. Here's Mikal Bridges just talking about, you know, their success in game fours against the previous two LA teams.
We know that we don't play our way, that so we come out the next game with, like, more energy and juice. So I guess it's just usually off, you know, usually when we lose and we just we bounce back pretty fast and pretty hard. So I think that kind of helps us have those big game fours that you see. We got to stay together as a team, especially when we get loud, tough to hear. So we just kind of got to keep communicating to each other and know that, you know, we're all in here together and just, you know, staying with each other.
I mean, you're seeing it firsthand, Brad. We talk about how loud it is in Phoenix, and it's been crazy in the arena. But
yeah,
people are noticing it was loud in Milwaukee, and the players are noticing too. So they're maybe got hit by surprise almost last game. They haven't really been in any loud arenas. I mean, LA wasn't really at full capacity in either of those series, and Denver, you know, it's a good basketball town, but it wasn't necessarily like Milwaukee with the fan base, and it wasn't the finals. So I think they're going to have to kind of overcome that in this game and just kind of center themselves once again.
So I have not been in an arena where there are fans that walk in with elk antlers on their hats. That was different. I have not been in an arena where during the first media timeout, they have a beer chugging contest and the guy smashes his beer can on his head. I have not been in an arena where the loudest cheer for the celebrity in the stands is Donald Driver. That's Milwaukee, and it's fine. People have gotten on my case thinking you're picking on them. No, this is a small town. It's a small town in a big NBA Finals series. And you know, walking around the streets last night and the last couple days, you could not tell that the Bucks are in the finals unless you go right up to the arena and where the bars are all located. And it's a hardworking town. And when you ask people about it, oh yeah, we're looking forward to the game on Wednesday night. But it's not like in Phoenix, it's purple and orange everywhere. And even so, Spurge, I don't think Phoenix is nearly what it was in 93 in terms of hype and build up and all that stuff. There was no social media back then, so people decided to go paint their cars and paint their houses. Now they take a picture of it. It's just a different deal. I don't feel like, you know, if they draw 250,000 fans downtown, if they win or if they lose the series, you know, it's not going to surprise me either way. I just think that these are two towns, and the ratings aren't bad. But these are two towns that just haven't been in this space in many, many years. For the Suns, 93. For the Bucks, it's been 40-plus years. And so there's kind of a, you know, how do you get used to that? Was it loud in the arena the other night? Yeah, it was loud, but was it loud for the Suns against the Lakers? Yeah. Was it loud against Denver? Yeah. Were there Laker fans in the stands in Phoenix? Of course. In Denver, was it loud? Was there altitude? Yeah. I don't know. All that stuff to me, it's, I think the most interesting thing that's come out the last 2 days to me is Monty Williams talking about officiating and lack of free throws for the Suns and 17 free throws for Giannis. And so he's trying to do the officiating game, trying to work the officiating game. And he downplayed it yesterday. Like, well, somebody just asked me the question. Well, I don't know. When the Denver fans are complaining about the Suns getting all the free throws, it's a two-way street. And then there's the whole conspiracy theory that the NBA just wants this thing to go 5, 6, 7 games so that there's extra revenue coming through. There's a lot of fans out there that think that this is rigged. There are. And not this series, but that the playoffs, you know, okay, we need a game 4, we need a game 5, we need a game 6. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know a lot of fans believe that's true. Are you one of those?
Not necessarily. I get where they're coming from. I mean, the NBA makes more money the longer a series goes on. But I personally just – I can't wrap my head around the fact that a league would do that, and it's totally possible. But I just – I don't think that's what it is. I just think that's just the way the game is played. There's going to be calls that go against your way. There's going to be the Scott Fosters of the world who maybe have something against a player or a team in just a slight fashion, but it's just enough for them to kind of change the way they call a game in a slight way. So, like, I think that's real, but the actual league kind of – forcing the issue. I don't really think that's what it is.
Yeah. Last night, and Iron Man, this is where I'm going to go to the photos I sent you, those two. Last night, I went to dinner with Kent Summers, columnist for The Republic, and Dan Bickley over at 98.7. The three of us have been in the Valley forever and a day, so he said, let's go out. So we went to this little pizza joint. I don't remember the name of it. And Jared, if you want to throw up either one of those photos, and I'll just go through it. The za that I ordered last night, Spurge, had sausage, had bratwurst, and sauerkraut on it. I said, you know, I got to go for this. When in Milwaukee, do as Milwaukeeans do. And I've been getting roasted on social media for taking on this bad boy. And like, seriously, all I needed was some mustard to throw on the sauerkraut, and I would have been good. The pizza was called a Milwaukee pizza. So I took on that. Would you do this? Would you do a, you know, kielbasa and sauerkraut pizza?
I think I would. When I travel, I never eat anything that's like not local. I like to eat sort of whatever's going on in that area. So right. I think I would give it a shot. I want to have something where I can't have it at home. Like, that's just my rule when I travel. I try to avoid things that I can have at home unless it's you get in super late and the only thing's open McDonald's. All right, whatever. Beyond that, I would try it. Yeah,
like Spotted Cow, that's the beer of choice back here. So, you know, you got to find a Spotted Cow. And so, yeah, Dan and Kent and I had a good time last night. We watched the All-Star game for a couple hours and then took a lift back into downtown and made our way around. And, you know, it was fine, but I'll be very, very happy to get out of here. I've had enough. I just want this game to get finished up, and then we'll move on to the next round. And you and Claudia are hosting tomorrow, right?
Yep, we'll be hosting tomorrow with the Suns with a 3-1 lead or a 2-2 series, so it could be really interesting.
Yeah, bring the sledgehammer out if they're down. Okay.
Yeah, we may have to.
There you go. By the way, there's people now I'm seeing. Have you seen this on social? There's people that are naming their newborns after Suns players.
Yeah, I saw someone.
Would you do this? Devin Booker.
I don't know if I'd go that far. If a name happens to match up and that was the name in my head, great. I don't know if I would necessarily be like, oh, you know, they're in the finals. I just had a kid. Let's just spontaneously name them Devin. It's a cool story. I don't see an issue with it, but
there's going to be a lot of Jays and DeAndres. I think because the Diamondbacks, when the Diamondbacks won the World Series, there were stories about people that were naming their kids after the Diamondbacks. And I want to go find those kids now, because that was in 2001, and say 20 years later, are you happy that your name was, I'm trying to think who'd be a good one on that team. Kurt, Randy, did your parents call you RJ? Big unit, you know, all that stuff. And they're like, yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why they did that. So, but that's kind of fun. All this is fun. All this is fun. It's the middle of July, and God bless the NBA for taking us through a summer in Phoenix. I think all these fun angles are there. Did you see last night Jimmy Kimmel? By chance, you hear about this one?
I think I heard about it a little bit this morning when I was reading, but I didn't see it yet.
So Arsenio Hall was filling in, and Arsenio asked LeBron, who was on there, to promote Space Jam 2. I've heard mixed reviews on Space Jam 2, by the way. Heard it was very, very funny, and then I've heard it was just god-awful. But that said, so Arsenio's asked LeBron on the air, would you like to play with Chris Paul? Because LeBron and Chris Paul are very, very close. Mm-hmm. And LeBron was joking, laughing, saying, and he said, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. There still is the feeling that Chris Paul is going to opt out at the end of August. And I'm not here to be a bummer today. I know we're still in the middle of the playoffs, but let me just be straight on this stuff. When a guy like LeBron James shows up to go on with Arsenio Hall and to think that it's just off the cuff impromptu and they don't know what questions are going to be asked is complete BS. So, you know, we're going to ask you about this. Fine. And it's all run through Maverick Carter and all of his people. And so he puts it out there. Now, is that tampering? Well, he's going to be a free agent. It was like when Doc Rivers was talking about Kawhi Leonard a couple of years ago, and he said, oh, Kawhi Leonard is the greatest thing ever. And then they slapped him with a $100,000 fine with his coach in the Clippers. These guys tamper all over the place. So I don't know. That'll be interesting. All right. Good stuff there. Be brilliant tomorrow. And are you doing anything tonight? Are you in on this tonight? Are you jumping out of this tonight?
Probably not going to make it out of Chase Field. I have a feeling that's – I appreciate what they're doing, but it's on the Jumbotron only. I don't know how that's going to go for fans.
You don't need
they
to
might
do
like
that.
It. They might not. It doesn't seem like it'll be worth it.
You don't need to do
good
that.
Fans are getting together, but and it doesn't seem like it's going to be that. Cool.
All right. Have fun. I'll talk to you later. All right. Take a break here on the other side. We continue on. Stay with us. All right, as promised, in between games, 3 and 4 here in Milwaukee, and we continue to bring voices of people that Monty Williams has said impacted him and his journey to get to where he is. Fans are just fascinated. A lot just learning the story about what Monty has been through and the loss of his wife at the time and the kids and getting back into the game. And Nate McMillan's name has been brought up throughout this journey. And the head coach, I won't even say interim anymore. Congratulations, first of all, on the 4-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks, joins us for a few minutes. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Sure. First on the Hawks, what a journey. If I had told you in, I don't know, February, January, that this was going to happen, would you believe me?
I would have no idea of what you were talking about. I mean, it really was a journey. I think at that time I was an assistant coach.
Right.
So I wasn't even in that head coaching seat. And then, when things didn't go well and they gave me the opportunity to coach the team, I challenged the team to be better, to do better, not only the team, but the coaching staff. We needed to show that we were better than what we had shown the first part of the season. They did that. We got off to a really good start, won our first 8 games. They started to believe in the vision that we were giving them. And, the chemistry got better, execution got better, and we ended up making a really good run and reaching the Eastern Conference Finals and just really having a fun season.
Yeah. No, I want to talk to you about the finals in Milwaukee, but let's get into Monty Williams for a few minutes. When did you first come across Monty, Nate?
Well, when I took over Portland, back in 2005, I was going into a rebuild situation. And what I wanted was a young coach with energy, with the knowledge, with the commitment to helping me turn an organization around. I really needed, someone with a lot of energy. And Monty was a guy that I knew him. I knew of him, but I didn't have really a relationship with him. And when I interviewed him and talked to him about what I wanted to try to do in Portland, he was on board with it. And he was a big part of us turning that organization around. At that time, when we came in, they were called the Jailblazers. And we had to really change the culture. You know, it was a successful organization, but for about 4 or 5 years, the players were getting in a lot of trouble. They had lost their fan base. And, you know, Portland has a strong fan base. They had lost their fan base. You know, the people weren't coming to the games. They didn't really respect the team. Or how they played. So we was given that challenge of turning it around, bringing back the respect of the game, winning basketball, playing the game the right way. Character was really important for us. So we needed to do it not only on the floor, but in the community as well. And it was no better, you know, better person to bring on at that time, now that I look back, than Monty Williams.
What, when you interviewed Monty, and I know it was years ago, but what was it that struck you about him in the interview? And what were some of the questions you needed answers to that he hit on that you said, this is the guy?
Well, it's just, when you talk with him, you know that, you know, this guy he's honest. He's going to be loyal. He's going to work. He's going to give you everything that he has. He's going to be committed to doing things the right way. And you know, he's smart. I love him. I mean, he's a brother. He's a brother from another mother. And we've really developed that. We've continued to have that friendship, and it has really grown into a big brother, little brother type of relationship. But, you know, he had, you know, had a high basketball IQ. He knew exactly what he wanted to do and how he could help. And I believed in that. And, you know, he believes in his faith. And, you know, right off the bat that nothing is going to be. He's not going to leave that. Mm-hmm. He's not going to stray away from that. You know, his faith is and what he believes in keeps him in line and keeps him doing the things that leads him into the future, you know, far as, you know, his family, his job, his friends. You know, he's just committed to doing things the right way.
Nate McMillan with us for a few minutes, head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, talking about Monty Williams as we are in between games 3 and 4 here in Milwaukee in the NBA Finals. When did you know that you had a head coach on your staff in Monty Williams?
We had a lot of injuries in Portland, and there was one day we didn't even have enough guys to practice. So I came in one morning and I had laid out my workout gear because I was going to play the next day. Mm. And I came in and I said, look, we got to play because we just got to work on execution. We could only play 4-on-4 because we just didn't have enough bodies. And Monty would often play with the guys. But I told Monty this particular day, you're not playing, I'm playing, because I thought we were soft. I wanted it to be physical. I wanted to rough some guys up. So I was going to play. And Monty said, no, coach, I got it. I said, no, I got it. I got it. And we went out and we started playing. And it got so physical, and my team was winning, by the way. But it got so physical that one of our players dove for a loose ball and a couple guys just crashed to the floor and he got cut. He had to get stitches. So he had to leave the scrimmage to go to get stitched up at the hospital. So now Monty has to play. We need another body because we don't have enough guys to finish. So Monty has to play. So now Monty and I are guarding each other. And I run out to Monty is running out to set a pick and roll. And I run out behind him and I tear my Achilles. And this is now I tear my Achilles in this scrimmage. The next day we got a game. And I'm on the sidelines with I can't get up. So I gave the duties to Monty to coach, to get up and make the calls. And right then I knew that, he pretty much, I mean, everything went smooth. I think we won most of those games that he was calling the sets and running the team. You know, I had to sit down. I'm on the sidelines in a boot on crutches and Monty is up giving the calls. I'm giving the calls to him, but he's coaching the team. And I knew then that he one day would be on the sidelines coaching his own team.
What do you see in Phoenix from Monty that you saw in 2005?
I see a team that is organized. They're prepared. They've done a great job of putting that roster together. Yeah. James has done a great job. I coach James as well. So I work with him during that time. And Monty and I was all of us were together. But I think they've done a great job of putting that roster together, riding the momentum that they had from the bubble into this season, and they are still on that momentum that they started last year. Monty has done a great job of really giving that team a vision and giving them the roadmap on how they're going to accomplish their goals. And, you know, I don't know if any of them believe that they would be playing for a championship this year, but the getting into the playoffs and believing in themselves and playing better basketball is something that I know they for a fact felt that they could do. And with the addition of Chris Paul being added to that roster, they felt that they could have success in the playoffs, and now they're in the finals. And I know they believe that they can win. And I think they can, you know, that it's everything is working out for them. You know, the roster, they're healthy. I think that's a big key to having success in the finals, having your team pretty healthy, and they're playing, really the best basketball in the league right now.
Before I get you out of here, you saw Giannis up close and personal. We're sitting here last two games, 40-10. Last time it was done four times in a row was Jordan in 93. The fans in Phoenix are concerned of can Ayton stay on the court? Chris Paul referred to building a wall after the last game. Mm-hmm. Just as an analyst coach looking at this from a distance, what would you do if you went through it and trying to keep Giannis away from going off? It's a pick your poison. Either you get around him or you say, okay, we're going to have the other guys beat us. Middleton's going to go get his 25. Holiday's going to go get his 18. Lopez is going to go get his pick your poison, I guess, is the best way to put it, right?
Well, I mean, Milwaukee is a team that they're going to attack the paint. They're going to attack the paint with penetration. and they're going to attack the paint with second opportunities. You know, so what they're talking about building that wall, you have to do that because Milwaukee is going to be attacking, trying to get downhill. And with Giannis playing, he does a great job of consistently attacking your paint. And, you know, they will take what you give them. If you're building that wall and you're giving them 3-point shots, they will take that. Mm-hmm. But if you're guarding the perimeter and you are allowing Giannis to play one-on-one, they will also take that, you know. So I think, you know, the wall is something that when he is playing, you need to try to show him a wall, because if there's any type of cracks or if he thinks that he can get a leg or a foot through that and get to the paint. And that wall has to be built above the free throw line. You know, a lot of teams, they tend to play Giannis a little soft. And, you know, if he gets a foot in the paint, his next step is at the rim. I mean, this guy can take two dribbles from half court and get to the rim, you know, so his launch pad is a lot further out than most guys. So I think you have to build that wall a lot higher against him and try to keep them out of the paint. Milwaukee is a paint team. They're going to attack you with penetration. They're going to attack you. The offensive glass, they're excellent offensive rebounding team. They are big and physical with Lopez and Portis. You know, and they basically won the paint against us. They really dominated the paint. I think it was only really one game that we did a decent job. We allowed only 44 points in the paint, whereas they was averaging about 60 points in the paint against us, which is way too many.
Before I get you out of here, anything about Monty that I didn't ask you that you're like, Brad, here's the deal with him, or did you get it all out of you?
No, I know you guys got a great coach there, and I think he'll be there for a long time because he's going to represent that organization the right way. The players are going to represent and play the right way. And as long as they, you know, give him, you know, as we used to say, the ingredients, the players to be competitive, to give themselves a chance to win, they're going to win. And I mean, you got the right man there. I think he'll be there for a long time. And I think if you continue to give him the roster that you will see, you will continue to see these types of results.
Great stuff there. I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the contract, Nate. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Here's Nate McMillan, head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. And we're back with more in Milwaukee after this timeout. All right. Nice enough to have Bob Ryan back on the show for a few minutes. The quintessential sports writer, of course, covered the NBA inside and out and still looks deep into what's going on in the world of basketball. Before I get into what's going on here in Milwaukee with the Suns, I have to start with USA Basketball. Just, is this panic session? Patty Mills took them down last night. Pop tried to play it off. The Olympics are a few weeks away. A lot of people talking about it, Bob. I'm really curious your thoughts. Is it time to panic a little bit?
Well, panic. If people think it was going to be a walkover, I guess they're panicking. I had a question, though. I thought our team was going to be good enough. It's not a perfect A team. And we're long past the stage when we could win the Olympics with a B team. So you need at least an A-, a B-plus team. And my question was, is there any country stacked up enough with enough NBA talent to give us a threat the way Spain did in 2008 and 12? Both of the gold medal games against Spain were in question with like 3 minutes to go. You know, that's the kind of reference I was making. I didn't foresee. And if you had told me we'd lose to Australia, I would have said, Nigeria blew my mind. And I've seen, look, I've been in this international scene since 1992. And I've watched but and I know what Nigeria's problem always was, no coaching. Now they got Mike Brown, but there's seven NBA players, none of whom anybody can name, by the way. And right, but that's a shock because we did beat them by 83 in London and 43 in an exhibition game at 16. So that for the idea of them beating us, that got my attention. And I'm not shocked about losing to Australia. We're going to have to get our act together. And remember, this team has been thrown together. They haven't had any. We just still have the whole team. Booker's going to be on that team, you know. So I think, right? So, you know, we're going to have to work to do it.
Yeah, there's no Booker. There's no Jrue Holiday. There's no Chris Middleton. They're all here. But I guess when I'm watching the game, it's the game here in the States has turned into a lot of foul, flop acting. The international game, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Bob, it's physical. You're going to get hit. That's different than the NBA. Am I right on this? That's how I've
I never framed it that way, but I'm listening to you. I'll have to, maybe things are evolving that way. I never thought about it because the thing, the difference I always thought and where we've emulated them was the drive and kick. You know, they were the first to absolutely emphasize this. Their number one mode of attack was drive and kick, outside shooting, 3-point shooting. They were ahead of us for a while, they being Europe, a lot of European players, including the big men. You know, the evolution of the big man, the demise of the five man is a European evolution. You know, we first saw it with Krešimir Ćosić. And then I'm telling you, back when it was Yugoslavia, back in the 70s, Krešimir Ćosić was the godfather of all this big man facing up from 25 feet. Look it up. All right. He's the guy. And then they've all emanated from them. And we've all come around. But then again, think about who some of the practitioners are in the NBA. Jokic, all right, is the best. And so, you know, but the guys have come around. Look at Brook Lopez. Totally reinvented himself. Went from never, ever, ever taking a three, except maybe at the end of a 24-second clock, to where, look where he is today. So, you know, that's the way the world is. Anyway, physical, I hadn't thought about that. I'll give you, you're one up on me on that.
Yeah, it's just a view of it. Bob Ryan with us for a few minutes, chopping it up. Suns tomorrow night against the Bucks here in Milwaukee, game number 4. What do you make out of this series so far?
All right, people overreact. And it really frustrates me, the ignorance of history. I mean, your sport history. Yes, the Bucks won game 3. They ought to win game 3. I've been watching the NBA closely since 69. And in that series, the Celtics lost the first 2 games in L.A. Guess what? They won in 7. Including on the road. I don't have the numbers in front of me, okay? But I tell you that I expect when it's 0-2, unless there's a clear mismatch, when a team goes home after 0-2, that's a good bet. I've seen it too many times. I lived through counting by myself just personally. Innumerable times 0-2 went to 2-2, and eventually the better team flexes its muscle, wins in 6 as a rule. Celtics did that with Buffalo in 93. They did that with Phoenix. They did with Phoenix in 76. I've seen and many, many teams. So they won the game. Fine. Wonderful. Now we get rolling. Let's see what happens in game 4. That's not a gimme for them at all. And I think game 3 is predictable, that you expect that if there's any kind of parity at all. Sometimes there isn't. You know, we've had 6 sweeps, but you don't anticipate a sweep. I never do.
Okay, so Giannis, 40-10, 40 points, 2 games in a row. He's asked afterwards, and rightly so, about comparisons to Jordan, who did it 4 games in a row. And, of course, Giannis is like, I'm Giannis. I'm not going to get in that discussion. What do you see out of Giannis? I'm not saying compare him to Michael Jordan, but
that's a preposterous comparison because they're different players. One's 7 feet tall and one's 6 feet 6. Right. Or 5, whatever he was. I mean, so stop it. Why don't people? What's the matter with people? I'm embarrassed with sometimes people in our profession, Brad, that just pose ridiculous things. Anyway, Giannis. The interesting thing about what's going on is that the Giannis deterrent in the last 2 playoffs was the wall. They were able to build the wall. Mm-hmm. Well, the Suns certainly didn't build any walls in these games. And he's doing anything he wants to do. And what he wants to do is spend his entire life in a 6-foot circumference around the basket, which he should Forget the stupid three just to prove to people you can make it. That's ridiculous. Do what you do best. I want to see what they can do. You know, Ayton got in foul trouble, but even so, he's still spotting him 4 inches, and he's not a muscle man. You know, it's not like he's going to beat him up. So I don't know. This is going to be interesting. But the last 2 years, teams have had I won't say a deterrent, but they've had a neutralization, you know, to a degree about him. But right now, the Suns don't have an answer. And it's, you know, but that's the other thing, Brad, and you know this. Playoffs are series are adjusting to an adjustment to the adjustment to the Monty's going to come up with try something else. Now I was amazed when he went short and small the other day, you know, and he's got Cameron Johnson, and I mean that's not going to work. Come on, Monty, you know better than that. But he's got to figure something, and maybe, you know, I don't know, pick up the ball deeper in the court to prevent him from getting the ball by better defense on the ball handlers. That would be my, you know, the first thing. I'll say one thing and I'll shut up a minute. Give him his due. He is the greatest finisher in the history of basketball. There has never been anyone that size with that ball handling capability that can and who can take off from so far out, whether he's in transition or not, and finish. He's the I like to be judicious with the words always and never, well, or superlatives. This is the greatest finisher we have ever seen. Don't let him finish if you can help it.
Who reminds you? Who does he remind you of in your years of seeing the game, past tense?
Nobody. Nobody's been 7 feet tall. We have one other guy that is in the discussion of being that tall that has extraordinary ability and is actually a better player because he's a better shooter, and that's Durant. Right. And other than that,
some people say Garnett, Bob. Some people say Garnett back in the day.
He's triple A. In terms of the offensive capability, better defensive player. Kevin Garnett's all around. Kevin Garnett's a fascinating player because he's the most reluctant great scorer in the history of basketball. You know, he scored 25,000 points and nobody ever remembers him taking a shot. You know, so that's different. He's different. I mean, only because of the size. Oh, he's a big step in that evolutionary chain that began with Čosić that I talked about. Yeah. And right now, you know, the ultimate manifestation of that is Jokic, not Antetokounmpo, because Antetokounmpo's greatest asset is going to the basket, which is which is not Jokic's. So he's sui generis. And by the way, most of the truly great ones are. There's something about them that distinguishes them from everybody else. You know, and certain times there's very fascinating comparisons, like a Michael and Kobe, the skill set, the mindset. You know, that's the closest twin thing I can think of that in this discussion.
Before I get you out of here, Chris Paul. So Chris Paul comes to Phoenix. He was the glue that was missing. But his overall game, Bob, he's never been in this position before. And there's some people that have said, well, this will validate him as a basketball player. And that's always the case when it comes to some in winning a title. Charles Barkley and I have gone back and forth on that when he was in Phoenix, that he's never really validated. I said, that's BS. You had a great career. Chris Paul, what do you see out of him as a player overall, not just here in Phoenix?
The first fallacy people have, and I'll give you Exhibit A, was Isaiah Thomas. The first fallacy people have is that a guard at this level can control the game totally or be the number one factor in winning a game or a series or a team establishing a reign of superiority, whatever you want to call it. It ain't happening. When we had the great triumvirate of Magic, Michael, and Larry reigning supreme over basketball, pressing his nose against the glass was a 6'1" guy named Isaiah Thomas. There's only so much a little guy can do, okay? He can't affect the game the way a mid-sized all-around player can, rebounding, passing, assisting, defending, willing. There's only so much a little guy can do. He is as good at what you can do he's in the elite level of all-time great point guards, you know, understanding how to, as Cousy used to say, hand out the sugar, you know, and make his own shot. He's the master of the mid-range shot. God love him for that. He's a wonderful player. But guess what? No point guard is going to be the best player in basketball at any given point in time, and maybe not even the best player in the series. I'm sorry. So people should take him off the hook. He can only do so much.
I appreciate your time, appreciate your insight, and thanks for chopping it up on the basketball front, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for remembering me. Thank you.
You got it. There's Bob Ryan. Of course we remember you. And we're back with more after this timeout.